I'd love to just welcome everyone to tonight's CCL training program. It's a weekly webinar of Citizens Climate Lobbies that provides CCL supporters like you and I with access to in-depth training opportunities on topics relating to climate change and effective climate advocacy. I'm your host, Brett Cease, and tonight's training is specifically going to zero in on CCL's legislative plan looking forward to 2020 and 2021. Dr. Danny Richter is going to provide us with a training with up-to-the-moment insights on the dynamics of Congress and especially what we're looking for in the next session and how we can most effectively use our time with the upcoming December lobby meetings with our members of Congress as well. So if we are doing our jobs well, at the end of tonight, you're going to walk away with three main focuses: the chance to understand CCL's interpretation of the election results, the chance to really understand the limitations, opportunities, and overall goals that we face with the lame duck period ahead of the new Congress, and then jumping into the 117th Congress, how our view of likely courses and goals overall for the new Congress really interacts and projects into the future. So with that, a man that needs no introduction, I'll still provide a brief one in case you haven't met him. He's a wonderful, fine gentleman there, featured tonight on the co-host role. Dr. Richter joined CCL staff in 2013 after 5 years as a volunteer. He completed his PhD and he got paid to do research on all seven continents before that. CCL's first staffer in DC, Danny established our DC office. It's an active hub today where he's been responsible for developing our overall legislative strategy, clarifying the details of CCL's policies and support, and interacting with many other groups in DC. And if you're a big fan like I am of the household impact studies and the dividend delivery study and the REMI study and all those, you have Danny and the research team to thank, because that is a big project that they've been working on throughout the years too. So with that though, thank you all for being here. It's a really exciting night and an exciting time. We're looking forward to learning more, and the mic is yours, Danny. We'll jump in.
Let's talk about the election, let's talk about the lame duck, and let's talk about the new Congress. So the election is where we've been, the lame duck is where we are now, and the new Congress is where we're going. So we're gonna talk about all of those. So the election, what just happened and what does it mean? Well, for president, we have Joe Biden, who by a narrow electoral college victory, though he had a wider victory in the popular vote, this means that there will be interest from the White House in pursuing a climate package. This will come from a creature of the Senate, Joe Biden, who has a history of working well across the aisle and who hails from a business-friendly state. Two-thirds of Fortune 500 companies are registered in Delaware. So those are things that I'm keeping in mind. For the House, we have Democrats that kept the House, but their majority was diminished after an election that had record turnout. Significantly, I'm noting that Brian Fitzpatrick, the only Republican fighting for re-election who had his name on a carbon price bill, and who was one of the most vulnerable Republicans this election cycle, he won convincingly. Robust support of a carbon price is not a death knell for Republicans, and it might even be their saving grace. You could say similar things about Susan Collins in the Senate, who is also very vulnerable, but won. And the Senate is the most important piece of what we're looking for from the government, and it's not just because we still don't know who's going to have control of the Senate. So despite having an unfavorable election map this election cycle, Republicans look likely to hold on to the majority. The only thing that would prevent them would be if both incumbent senators from Georgia lose their runoff elections, and these runoff elections won't take place until January 5th. So for our lobby day, we will be operating with uncertainty over who actually will control the Senate. But even if Democrats do win both of those runoff elections, Democrats would then have the narrowest, the slimmest of majorities in the Senate, requiring the vice president to break any ties. And as I said, we've known that the Senate is the really important thing to think about, even before this election, before we have this nail biter. The Senate is the narrow point for passing legislation. You can choose what analogy you like. If you're a chemist, you can call it the Senate is the limiting reagent of this reaction. If you're a fan of ancient history or just Frank Miller, the Senate is the Thermopylae or the hot gates of ancient Greece. If you are a fan of TV game shows, the Senate is the weakest link. And so choose your analogy, but you need to get through the Senate if you're going to get legislation passed. So in this context, I think that the House considerations by the House and by House members are probably going to matter less when something final is being passed. But of course, it still matters. What the House says, what they do, still matters. But senators are going to have more say in what the final package is going to look like. And so as we think about this, let's also think about some current trends on the issue of climate within the Republican Party. Back in January of this year, let's remember that the highest ranking Republican in the House, Kevin McCarthy, had a meeting of the entire party in the House on the topic of climate change. And this was quite significant because it showed Republican rank and file that they no longer had to fear any repercussions from their leadership if they were to stand up on climate and act on climate. Their electors, donors, that's a different conversation, but from their leadership, they did not have to fear repercussion. They might even be rewarded for being bold and making good things happen. And we also know that this was a significant meeting because in June, this showed up in notes. Seemingly unprompted, Republican staffers were bringing this up to you, to the volunteers in June. So we know that I've been talking about this meeting all year, but we also know that Republicans took note of what their leader said. When their leader says something and highlights that climate is a priority for the party, if we want to continue to win elections, they took note and they're reflecting that message back to us in our meetings. Another thing that I want to highlight is, of course, we do the analysis of these June meetings. We've been doing it since 2014. And one of the things I've been tracking is instances of climate skepticism. And in 2018, there were 21 instances, reading through the notes, where I found a well-trod, easily recognizable instance of a climate skeptic argument coming up in our meetings. That dropped to just 7 instances of climate skepticism in 2019. And this past June, there was only one office that brought up a skeptic argument. So our lived experience in working with Congress is that the Republican Party is shifting. They're not throwing up skeptic arguments to you when you're meeting with them and talking about what you want to see happen. So I think that based on this, we can say that the Republican Party is not going to be walking away from climate, but they still need to figure out how to talk about it in a way that is consistent with what the Republican Party has been saying in the past and with the order in which Republicans prioritize America's common values. I'm referring to Jonathan Haidt's work there. We all have the common values. It's just different prioritization. A different rank order of those values can lead to different decision-making. It will take time for the Republican Party to figure out how to talk about climate in a way that is consistent with their prioritization of our common values. And our job is going to be to accelerate that process. We want to accelerate Republicans in their process of talking about climate. We want Republicans who are already talking about climate to dream bigger, to talk bigger, and to do bigger. We want Republicans who are not yet talking about climate to start talking about it and to figure out, to begin with that grappling process of having their future statements be consistent on a values basis with their past statements. And so what are we looking at? What are we seeing in terms of priorities? Democratic priorities are, I think, pretty clear. First ones are, it's going to be COVID, dealing with COVID. It's going to be climate, and it's going to be justice, racial justice and environmental justice. With a Democrat in the White House and occupying the bully pulpit, he will be able to drive the focus of the nation. So I think that we'll be looking at these issues a lot, and I still think that we're talking about a package of bills around climate. So there's room for making a deal. Let's remember with the House Select Committee report, which came out in July, if you look at that, that's a package of ideas, of policy ideas that Democrats threw out there. And in it, you find not one, not two, but 3 kitchen sinks And that was pointed out to me, that's how you get something to be widely supported. And so that's the idea behind a package of bills. You put it together a lot of different ideas to make different political constituencies happy. And so that's, I think, what Democrats are going to be looking at. Another thing that we expect out of a Biden presidency is an attempt to reinstate some of the regulatory infrastructure that Trump has taken apart in his 4 years. But another huge thing that happened in the last month was that Trump got his third Supreme Court pick. So there is now a 6-3 conservative majority on the Supreme Court. And given that even 3 Trump picks ago, it was unclear if the Clean Power Plan that the Obama administration pursued would be ruled constitutional, I think we have to feel even less optimistic that regulations with existing authority are going to be able to survive the current Supreme Court. Thinking back to Congress, one of the things that came out in the Select Committee report, lots of ideas for regulation, but even regulating with new authority may be challenging. It's not to say that Congress shouldn't try, but with the Supreme Court, there's a possibility that the Supreme Court may rule certain ideas unconstitutional. And so with that perspective, you want to diversify your portfolio. If there's a risk, you want to mitigate that risk. And one thing that the Constitution is very clear that Congress has the power to do is to raise revenue and disperse them. In the parlance of the Constitution, Congress has the power of the purse, and that sounds a lot like a carbon fee. So a carbon fee, any kind of a carbon tax, very clearly constitutional. Congress definitely has the authority to do that. And that's something that the Supreme Court would not be able to challenge. So as we have this new landscape, those are some things that I'm thinking about. What about Republican priorities? If they do keep the Senate, which I would say is likely, I think that the primary objective of Mitch McConnell is going to be to protect vulnerable senators in the next election in 2022. That map is also unfavorable to Republicans for the simple reason that they are defending more seats than Democrats are. If you're defending more seats, that's more opportunities for things to go sideways, more likely for one of those members to lose. So I think that Mitch McConnell is going to be looking to give those vulnerable senators wins. And I know a lot of you are concerned about this possibility and what Mitch McConnell will or will not allow to come to the floor. But I think that his desire to protect his majority, and I think that if you look at those senators and the examples of Brian Fitzpatrick and Susan Collins, and the example set by Minority Leader McCarthy, I think that Republicans aren't walking away from climate, and there's a narrative developing that Republicans who are very forward on climate can win tough elections. And so I think that if Mitch McConnell were to allow something to come to the floor, it would be to protect those senators, and that would mean that you would have some Republican senators who want to be bold on climate. So I do think there's opportunities coming up in the coming Congress. So that's the election. That's how we're thinking about the election. Now let's talk about the lame duck. Well, what needs to happen in the lame duck? Now there's some things that are always true, and there's some things that are true in this particular lame duck. So some things that are always true of the lame duck is the members of Congress are getting assigned to committees. And so there's a shuffling of the deck. Certain committees are more desirable than others. And that determines what committee a member is assigned to, determines their priorities, how they're focusing time, how they hire staff. So it's a pretty big deal in terms of their focus. And there's a lot of things that wait until they get assigned to their committees. Both parties are also going to be planning for the next 2 years. And this includes policy priorities. Just like you and I, it takes a while to figure out what just happened, especially when we have a runoff election that isn't scheduled until January 5th, that very well could determine the composition of the Senate and who has control. So planning is something that everybody's going to be doing, but there's also, it's going to be difficult because of that uncertainty. We also have 15 House races that have not yet been called, so there's uncertainty in both chambers. Then for those of you who have joined us on the Hill in past November lobby days, there's the literal switching of offices. So for those of you who've been on the Hill, you've seen leather couches in the hallway. You've seen very fine wooden desks in the hallway. Members of Congress are literally switching offices, and I just moved to a new house, and so I can speak from personal experience that moving causes chaos, and a scattered house leads to a scattered brain. So Congress will be rather scattered. There's also voting on the leadership, who has leadership of the party and who are the committee chairs. And then there's the staff changes within a member's office. There's retirements, new staffers become available. Maybe there's a previous relationship, they want to hire it. Other staff are going, they're moving on. There's just a lot of motion. And so people will be getting to know their new boss, their new colleagues. People will not yet be hired. That's particularly true of new members of Congress. New members of Congress may not even have a staffer for our issue area for a couple of months after they're sworn in. So staff changes are a big source of uncertainty. And this time, specifically the lame duck, of course, there's those undecided elections. And we have to remember the continuing resolution. So Congress passed a continuing resolution for the budget before the election. They're due to consider that the same week that we go to lobby, of course. And what happens if they don't figure out how to fund the government is there's another government shutdown. And so we know that Congress will be, that will be their top priority, avoiding a government shutdown. And so what this amounts to is we're going to be talking to a Congress that is very busy, that is distracted, and that is also thinking ahead. Their heads are going to be partly into the future. So how are we to negotiate ourselves? How are we to manifest our goals in such a chaotic environment? Well, the way we're going to do this is with a simple, focused, and compelling message. That message is price carbon. It's effective. It's quick. It's popular. Do other things, but do this first. This needs to be the backbone of whatever else you do. That's going to be our message. And when we talk to offices, I think we want to lead with the fact that this pricing carbon is popular, because politics is, after all, a literal popularity contest. So we want to talk about the endorser's handout that we're going to be providing for you, and I'll be talking about on my webinar next week, in addition to the primary ask and the supporting asks. But for Democrats, when you're meeting with Democrats, want to lead with popularity, lead with that handout, emphasize the support that the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act has in Congress, emphasize the support of CCL. People don't know that we have 195,000 supporters, so mention that. Mention that experts support a carbon price, that they support a carbon fee and dividend approach, that they support the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. This is something that works, and it works fast, and it works big. The Supreme Court can't touch it, and it raises revenue, or it can raise revenue. A carbon price can raise revenue. And even if the Energy Innovation Carbon Dividend Act doesn't, mentioning that it can raise revenue for some of the other priorities, that can at least get some Democrats who aren't engaged in this solution space. And that's something that we want. We want them engaged in the solution space. For those of you who are going to be going into Republican offices, again, we'll start with the popularity. Emphasize the support that this policy approach has from businesses, from faith groups, and from the suburbs. Mention McCarthy's imperative on January 16th of this year. Mention as well that Democrats are going to be likely to push other policies that are harder to reconcile with a conservative agenda, conservative values. This is the middle ground, and that those who engage in that middle ground early are going to have an outsized say in the final structure of the policy that results. So get involved in climate, get involved early. It's already popular. Those are the things that we want to emphasize. So that's the lame duck. Now let's talk about the new Congress. And so first of all, just the structure to get ourselves familiar with what's going on in the new Congress. Here's some dates, some things that I'll highlight. Swearing in day for members of Congress is January 3rd. And for the new president, that would be January 20th. It is probably the case that all committee assignments probably are not yet set. So there will still be some lingering uncertainty as to who can do what and how to emphasize priorities. And then also want to talk about the basics of passing a bill. A bill has to pass the House, it has to pass the Senate. Those two groups need to come together, reconcile any difference in a conference committee. And then the result of that conference committee, that goes to the president's desk and the president has to sign it. Again, focusing in on the Senate, because it's the narrow point, there's a two-step process, and senators will often split their votes in this two-step process. The first, for most votes, and what I expect a climate package would have to go through this process, is the vote for cloture. Cloture is, this is basically the filibuster. You need 60 votes to overcome the filibuster to get a vote for cloture. Cloture just means you're going to vote on it for real. And the vote on it for real, that's just a simple majority, but it's a two-step vote process. And you might be able to get senators to vote for cloture, but who will vote against the actual bill. And that's a strategy to many, both Democrats and Republicans will use that on tricky issues. But that's what we need to get to. That's why the Senate is the narrow point. We need those 60 votes for cloture, and we need those that majority for passage. I'm thinking that the President-elect Biden will want to move quickly in the new Congress. And the reason I'm thinking that is because this is when everybody is furthest from their next election. And so they have the most room for maneuver. And he's going to have the most political capital. And we know from his remarks, from Vice President Harris's remarks, they want to spend that capital on COVID-19, on climate, and on justice. Those are the anticipated priorities of Democrats. If assuming McConnell still holds the Senate, which I think is likely, it will be with a slightly diminished majority. And that next cycle is going to be difficult for Republicans. So he's going to want to make it easy for them to defend their seats. And this could mean allowing climate bills to come and to allow those senators who have those tough races to take pro-climate votes on those bills, if that's what is going to help them get elected. So our goals in the next Congress are going to be, well, here's the context first. Bipartisanship is a must. The way that this election is played out, you need to be bipartisan. If you're not bipartisan, forget it. You're not going to get anything done in Congress. And so our priority, climate, is actually aligned with the priorities of President-elect Biden. That's a wonderful thing. It doesn't happen very often that as an advocacy organization, the thing you're advocating for aligns with the priorities of the president, the person occupying the bully pulpit. So this is fantastic. And what we want to do is we want to make the case that our preferred solution is the easy, good solution that is also durable. So it's a good solution, it's effective, it's going to address the problem, but it's also politically easy. And that's going to be our task. So our task is to, I like to use the term, stack the deck. We want to get as many co-sponsors as possible to make the case that this is the easy, good solution that has the best shot of bipartisan support. It already has expert support. It's immune to Supreme Court challenge, and it will cut emissions by the most, the fastest, at the least cost, which would leave money, more money for other Democratic priorities. So those are our goals in the coming Congress. And those are my remarks. Now we're going to transition to questions because I know that I can talk all I want, but really it's answering your questions that I think you get the most.
And beyond that though, we are so grateful. You are the ones making the progress happen. You are the most trusted team, and the cavalry, as Marshall would remind all of us, charging into our December lobby days, and we'll rejoin again, same time, same channel, next Thursday night. We'll enjoy another review with Danny. So thank you all. And in the meantime, I'll unmute all lines. Stay safe out there, everyone.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Citizens Climate Lobby's training program. You can tune into more episodes anywhere podcasts are available. Inspired by what you heard today? Join Citizens Climate Lobby to advocate for bipartisan climate solutions. Go to community.citizensclimate.org to find more trainings, resources, your local chapter, national action teams, discussion forums, and more. Be sure to like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Citizens Climate. We also invite all of our listeners to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more inspiration. And together, we are creating the political will for a livable world.